All right, cool. Let's go. So, last week we started talking about the self, the Atman, and we specifically dodged into this saying that we say to ourselves all the time, and to each other, and we look at somebody going through something, and we say to that person, "Get yourself together," or we say, "Control your emotion," or "Control your mind." These are the say we say to each other, and we actually dug very deep. It became into a very interesting conversation last week about these three things that really happen and takes place in this life we call reality. And then the question was asked, can the mind really be controlled? That was the first question we had to do. So, because if you're telling someone to control their mind or control their emotions or get themselves together, we must know if the mind can really be controlled. Can the mind really be controlled? And this was one of the main discussions we had last week. And it was very interesting to hear all the different ideas that different individuals have about the mind. But this very thing that we call the mind, how much control do we actually have of it? And so, just to recap, I would like to ask the question on the floor again. Can the mind really be controlled? Anyone? There's a Schmidt, second mic there. Yeah, it's on. You should be on, yeah. I don't know if I think that mic's not on. I didn't think you didn't switch it on. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
it's on now.
Sweet. Yeah, I think only to an extent. And I think there's some things that you can build your mind up to, and it's like training your brain to become more, or just to develop it, just to become stronger.
Yeah.
But I think to fully control it 100%, I don't think that is possible.
So when we tell people control your mind, what do we expect from them? When we say, get your mind together, man, get your life together, control your mind, control your emotions, which is the two of the same thing, what are we telling them to do? Because it's very interesting, and I compared last week, a mind is like a child. And a lot of parents think that they can control the child. It sounds like you've got power to it, but try. You can't. How do you control a child? You can't. And we discussed last week that the only thing you can do is you can learn how to communicate with a child, just like you can learn how to communicate with the mind. But controlling itself is impossible. And so we are already doing people great pain by telling them to get themselves together. Because now when you tell someone get themselves together, they physically think they gotta get themselves together and solve something that's a big conundrum, but it's not that way. It's like as if a parent looked at a child and you told a child, fix yourself. How do you tell a child to fix itself? Even though it does fix itself. That's a very interesting. It's a very interesting way of looking at it. But if you were to take a child and put him in the midst of on conscious attention, let's say a big group of people, and they're all telling the child how they need to fix this, fix that, fix this, fix this, be good at this, be good at that, what do you think would be the result of the child? Can any good come out of that? And so that's what we try to do with our minds. Fix this, fix that, get yourself together, get this, get that. Stop thinking about this, stop thinking about that. React this way, don't react like that. And it's almost the harder we fight to fix it, the worse it gets. And it's just like a child. The more you actually try to get control over your child, the more rebellion they become, the more they rebel. And it's always been an interesting factor where humans have thought that they had some sort of power over their mind. And to also say we have no power is also wrong. And the line is very arbitrary because though you have power, you also don't have power. But the power you have, it's almost like a power of influence. It's like a child. And those who are parents know this very well. Influencing, what's going on? Influencing a child, it is much easier than telling them what to do. So is influencing the mind. That's why everybody seems to have an influencer they follow and so they follow it. And it's so easy to follow it and to abide by the rules and so forth. But if you were to lay down ground rules from the very beginning, nobody will follow ground rules. But if it's done in a process of influence, it flows. If it's done in a process of force and process and control, it's blocked. And so the mind is that way. So when we're thinking about getting ourselves together and this terminology of getting your emotions together, I think I brought up one very interesting point last week about thoughts, because the conscious mind or the subconscious mind, this doesn't produce thoughts, even though it looks like it does. But thoughts in itself, where did that come from? We know not where it comes from. People speak of the pineal gland and other stuff that they believe may be a channel that leads to an area where thoughts originate from. But until this day, we know not. Medicine hasn't been able to figure it out. We still do not know where thoughts come from. What is the base and origin of thoughts? And so if thoughts is what governs our mind, we got no control over where it comes from and how it gets produced. Although we can influence what comes out of it, how much control can we actually have of it? So then we start seeing our mind in a different method, because if we can't control it, we must learn how to influence it. And influencing is the way. And so I gave an example last week about Women are a very beautiful example. To influence a lady, a woman, you must speak her language. You must know her language. And I've seen people that have been that had all this form of looks and so forth. And the moment they open the mouth, the lady just turned around. Wow. You still must speak the language. There is a language that must be spoken. So it's the same with the mind. The amount of power and authority and whatever you think you are and how strong you think you are, thinking that you can control the mind like that, stop that. It's useless. People have tried to, they've gone to gurus and tried to fast for 45 days and tried to get the mind to think about nothing by force. And they've tried all sorts of things around the world. Matter of fact, the whole world suffers from one very thing. And that very thing is the battle we fight every day, is how do you sustain, and I don't want to use the word control, but that's essentially what people try to do every day, is the battle to control the mind. So I go in and I take all these drugs and all this stuff. Why? I'm just trying to keep the mind sane. I'm just trying to get it together in the mind. It's really, just look everywhere. Those who react to situation is just, it's the mind. That's all. They're just trying to control the mind. That's it. There's nothing else to do in this earth. All these problems we have is really just because we are trying to control the mind. And that's what we do every day. And so we spoke of, can the mind really be controlled? And we said, nah, influencing is the way to go. But influencing requires the language. So we spoke about these very concepts, which is the conscious mind is what a man knows. And the subconscious mind is what a man is. And so everything you've lived from the start of your life when you were born, all that stuff resonates, all the logic, the reasoning, all that stuff is the conscious mind. And usually you can access them every time. Someone brings up a topic, you argue with the person on the topic, you're using your conscious mind casually and all the time. But the subconscious mind is what you really are. And in that sense, it's not talking about the original form, it's talking about the identity you've built of yourself. That's what reigns in the subconscious mind. And matter of fact, research says that the subconscious mind is about 90 to 95%, and the conscious mind is that 10 and 5%. So only if we were to look at it in terms of control, you could say you only control 5% of your whole entire mind. And 95% of it is out of your control. And so we try to control 95%. But 95% has power over the 5%. So it's undoable. You can't do it. And the subconscious mind is usually seeds that have been passed down from DNAs and from all this stuff. And it's been stored up deep within you. It brings forth your habits and things that we can physically see you do. But the origin of it is deep down in your subconscious. And so then we spoke of the language now, because we've got to learn how to communicate with these children. We've got two child in us. We've got the conscious child and we've got the subconscious child. And we must learn how to communicate them with them. We can't control them, but we can communicate with them so that they may be sharpened, shapen, and follow after our influence. Well, we talked about two very interesting things. Feelings and telepathy. And I wrote here, if you want to change the mind, we must learn how to communicate with it. And we see feelings. Feelings is the language, and the language from the physical body to the conscious mind is all feelings. For example, someone gets cut with a knife, he feels pain. And that feeling is goes all the way to the brain and tells it pain is what happened. And vice versa. So feelings is the language that's been used to communicate both ways. If I get a certain thought, let's say I get a certain negative thought about how someone feels of me, straight away I can project that emotion, that feeling into the body. And it's like a frequency. And that's the best way to see it. It's like a vibration. And what it changes your whole body tone into a certain vibration. So a thought sparks up in my head, straight away my face drops, my demeanor changes, my vibration changes. And so there's a communication that just took place there. A thought was able to communicate to the body and tell it what to do. So does the body also able to communicate to the conscious part of the mind and also tell it what to do. And so feelings we see is a communication, is a language of communication right there. And so we must learn how to master our emotions, our feelings. And we must understand how it works to be able to communicate effectively. Then we see the subconscious mind, the deep within us. And we see the example of a newborn baby. And we see the example of a mother. These two don't speak English. They don't speak any language that's been invented. But somehow, the mother always knows what's going on with the baby. They communicate somehow. It's in the unseen. It's telepathy. It happens in the background. The baby don't need to speak English. And so, just that scenario itself tells us something very interesting. It tells us that we think very highly of the languages we speak, English, French, and all this stuff. We think it's the best way of communication. But matter of fact, when we look at a very beginning as a child, babies, we see there's much more effective ways of communicating. Matter of fact, we still communicate that way. And I always tell people an example of you could be in a certain location and think of a certain somebody. You haven't called them, and that person just calls you and says, "Oh yeah, I've been thinking of you too." Somehow you were able to send a frequency across the country or wherever that person is, and they were able to receive that frequency and contact you physically. So that tells us on a day-by-day and daily basis, we communicate with each other without any need of any language. And that's an interesting factor. If language is the bare minimum, in the sense that it's probably the last thing you do is use language, use words. You can walk into a room, look at people, get all the signals and vibration for different people, and inside of you, you'll start speaking. You start interpreting, communicating yourself from just the way people's body language are. And so there's so many forms of communication that do not require you or require us to open up our mouths. And so I would like to ask, if that's the case, what does that mean to you guys about the way we communicate? What does that really mean? Do we actually know how to communicate? Because at all time, we want to say words. We always want to speak something and say something. But before you even thought of saying something, you've already communicated in so many other forms and ways you don't even know you did. There's been frequencies and signals sent from your body to the mind, to the mind, to the other person, and the other person's body and the other person's mind, back and forth. There's been a whole chain of line of communication that's already taken place before you opened your mouth. But how much of those communication are we actually conscious of? Do we know how to communicate as humans?
I feel like we've lost touch with our senses, and like you're saying, like with the baby and the mother, I feel like one of those senses is telepathy. Like we've lost touch with that, and we've lost. We don't use our senses to the full extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in that, we've lost our communication with each other, with yourself.
Yeah, matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I just remembered that when I counsel couples and marriages and so forth, and I always ask and say, what's the problem? And one of the main things that always pop up is, he doesn't communicate with me well. He doesn't know how to communicate. And it's always interesting to listen to what both parties have to say, and then ask them, what is communication? What is it? Is communication words? Matter of fact, in the midst of an argument, the maximum amount of words are exchanged in an argument, but nothing is solved. That's interesting. Maximum amount of words are exchanged. But, as a matter of fact, it makes the situation worse than what it was originally. But we always have the tendency to run to words, thinking that the more we say and the more we explain ourselves, well, the more we actually understood. But that's a false. That's false. And so going back to the understanding of the language of the mind, the feelings and telepathy, these two like Cody said, we need to really consciously start monitoring ourselves. When you feel something, ask yourself, well, who is communicating to me? It's either who is communicating to me, or what part of my body is communicating to me, or what part of my mind is communicating. So that there needs to be a line of communication. Can we trace the line of communication every time we feel something? Are we able to trace the line of communication? Everything. People send you thoughts all the time. You think the thoughts you think is yours? You'd be surprised how much. Mike.
How can you send me thoughts?
The very beautiful thing is, let's have a look at, I like to use relationships because it shows how people have spent time, a lot of times together, and they've built in a deep connection. Matter of fact, this example might be better. I went to Bali with a couple of my mates, and when we were in Darwin, we developed languages and whatever that we use, Malkindingi and this, so forth and so forth. And we all know, walking through the street, and there's a couple of guys that came up to us wanting to sell drugs and stuff and things like that. Now, I look at my mate, he looks at me, we both know what we're thinking. I didn't open my mouth, he didn't open his mouth. What happened there? And when we opened our mouth, we said the exact same thing. At the same time. Very synchronous. In sync. What happened there? Who told who what to say? Because our brain doesn't function at the same frequency, at the same rate. Yeah.
I have a better example for you anyway, because you called me yesterday and you were just saying, hi, what you doing? But I didn't listen to those words because of thought. You sent me a thought that I picked up on. And
yeah.
How does it occur? Like, do I text in my mind and send it, or?
Well, this is the interesting factor. And us trying to really explain to you is like describing the wind. How do I describe the wind to you? Describe the wind to me. I always like to go back to this example. How do you describe the wind to a child? Because this can be experienced, but it can't be described because it's a power called omnipotent. Omnipotent means that it is you who do it, but you don't know how you do it, but you do it. It's the same thing as waking up every morning. It is you who do it. You wake up your whole system simultaneously. You can tell yourself the night before, I'm going to wake up at 7 a.m. dot. And you wake up 7 a.m. on the dot. How do you do it? It's an autonomous system that works behind the scene, which is what has fascinated the whole science world, which is what has fascinated anybody that stepped out of religion and realized, wow, there's bigger to God than what we see. It is you that make your heart beat. How do you do it? Well, I always give the example of breathing. You can consciously breathe. Well, you can stop, but you're still doing it. How much of it is what you're doing and how much of it is happening?
I was just arbitrary. Arbitrary. It's a happening. It's not a happening. It isn't.
You got that from Alan Watts. Straight away, I know the way you spoken. All right.
Good stuff.
Then we went into the split, because if we're going to communicate, we got to understand the split that we've created, this duality we've created in our minds, and this separation we've created in the mind, where we say, if you can't handle me at my worst, you can't have me at my best. This duality, this duplicity. This is me behaving, this is me misbehaving. The same entity, but we split it into two sets. And then we say, this is what I'm saying, this is what I'm insane. This is the best of me, this is the worst of me. And these are interesting say we say, where we've created this duplicity, this duality of the mind, thinking that one is not the other, and the other is not the other. And matter of fact, some people call this, they call this the separation between the mind and the heart. And this separation has caused great trouble to everybody. And the key here is, if you split yourself into two parties, when you make a mistake, you have to condemn a single party and leave the other. And that's what we always do. We say, all right, this is the best of me, so I won't touch that. Let me condemn this side of me. And say, only if I should have. Well, it's very interesting the way we see ourselves and the way we see our minds, and how we always like to create duplicity, especially when it comes to decision making. And so we talked about what it says in Jeremiah about this very interesting concept. It says, everyone, and this word everyone in the Hebrew, it's the word Adam, the soil, the very beginning, the man, is dull-hearted without knowledge. And the knowledge is talking about, it's talking about perception and discernment. It's saying every metalsmith is put to shame by an image, for his molded image is falsehood, and there is no breath in them. And this is a very profound verse, very big. Every single man out there, they've got a perception of themselves which is molded by a false image, the ego. And this is what has put them to shame. I recently realized something very interesting. I was thinking about it. I said, wow. Whenever you feel any form of shame, it's never really about what people are saying. Or it's not really, not, it never has to do with the external. Though it feels like the external world is pushing onto you, it's really all to do with the standard you set through the ego. You set a certain image of, for example, if I said to everybody, I'm a hardworking man, I wake up 5 o'clock every morning and do this. Now, the day I wake up 9 o'clock and someone calls me and said, bro, were you asleep at 9 o'clock? Aren't you supposed to wake up at 5 o'clock? See, that image I portrayed out there, now I feel guilty. Because that's the image I put out there. And especially if I've molded that image into something physical and made it, turned it into a standard. And so in the church, we've given our children and everybody the image of no sex until marriage, maintain that image. And so when you break that image, there's a sense of guilt. Even though it's not an image you molded. Well, the only thing that puts us and brings us to shame is those images that we've molded of ourselves.
What's the bit about the no breath?
There is no breath in them. And that's very interesting because the image originates from the ego.
So it's like an illusion, no life.
The ego doesn't exist. Yeah. It's an illusion. It's been molded by you. You have brought it to life. It's like everything you focus your mind on, that very thing comes to life. Right? You can do it with anything. You can right now you can look around, you can say every red car is gonna have an accident. Straight away you've molded that image. Now you're trying to bring that forth into reality. It didn't exist before, it was nothing. And we do it all the time. We sit there and say, I'm not smart enough. And then you start molding that image of you not being smart enough. It gets molded. I'm not this, I'm not that. It gets molded. And so now when it gets molded, not only does it come to life, that image gives you a label. And so people walk around in their forehead with labels. They do it all the time. And that's the worst tattoos you can ever have. It's not the physical tattoo you see in your hands, it's the label you carry in your face. And so when people come, oh, I experienced racism and this and this and this, what label are you carrying? I experienced this, so-and-so, my manager did this to me, what are you carrying? And so many times you want to point the finger and say, so-and-so is doing so to me. But I tell you, if you dig deep down into it, you realize, if I have a label of, I don't think I'm unattractive and I'm dumb, everywhere I go, oh, you're so dumb. And it sounds like the person is expressing it to me, but they're not expressing, they're reading off me. They're reading off my energy and how they do it. They themselves don't even know they're doing it. It's happening all subconsciously. And so they're reading it off. You're so dumb. Why? Because it's written in your forehead. You're unsuccessful. Why? Because it's written there. And so you, the molder of the image, carry that image, and whatever you carry, people must treat you as what you carry. They must treat you, must call you as the image you've molded and folded of yourself. But this really image, this image we've molded of ourselves, has no power behind it. You give it power. When you concentrate on it, you give it power. Let's say I have a partner, and the partner, she's done 6 or 7 things wrong. I can say, you know what? I'm going to let go of 5 of them. I'm going to hold on to this very one. You hold on to it, and it comes to life. And so how does it come to life? That mistake she made once, she just keeps making that same mistake again and again and again and again and again. And it gives you more reason to blame and condemn her. But you molded that image.
Is the ego always there? Or can you not identify with it? But if you don't identify with it, it just goes to a higher.
The problem we have is this. When a servant becomes a master, that becomes a problem. One who was created and meant to be a servant, if we take a servant and put it in the position of a master, that becomes a problem. And that's what we've done. We've taken, for example, another example of to get an understanding is our senses. For example, sight. The sight was designed to be a servant. It was designed to go out, just like the spies in the story of Moses, Joshua and Caleb and so forth, to go in, spy on the land. So for example, I'll use an example of the Young Achiever Award. I went into the stage a couple years ago. It was last year or the year before. I went to the stage, stood on the stage. I spied the land. I looked at it. I used my sight, my senses. And then I said, all right, cool. I'll be right here. I'm going to win it right here. Well, a year goes by, and I win it. Now, that's an effective use of the senses, because the senses were meant to go out and show you where there's a need. But once you already know there's a need here or there's a lack here, you don't need to use the senses anymore. We've got to switch now to faith. And this is deep in the subconscious. And so the ego really, when we talk about ego, its main governing power is the senses. It will be what you hear from somebody, how somebody looks at you, and so forth, all this information that comes in from the senses, or what the manager says. These words come in and have power over you and affect you, and you take those words and build on top of it an image. But in itself, those words that were spoken to you is useless. Someone comes in and says, you're black. So what? Makes no difference. It doesn't change me. You're dumb. Makes no difference to me. But if I want to mold it into an image, I say, what? What you say? What you say about me? And now I'm focusing on it. And every time you focus and you're applying energy to it, it's like if you watch anime, you're trying to do a Kamehameha right there. You're applying it. It's a concentration of conscious attention. That's what the ego is. A concentration of conscious attention. And you're building it into a big bowl and big use of power so you can fire back at somebody. And that's why the ego is very defensive. Always defensive.
You're saying you used your ego to get the Young Achievers Award?
In terms of what? Firing it back to somebody?
Or
in terms of the senses,
yeah.
Oh, 100%. The ego is very important. Because when I stood on that stage, I had to see myself as something that I was. And the only way I can do that is by molding an image also. I stand and I mold an image of a winner.
So it's not bad to form an image.
Nah.
It's not bad.
Well.
No. I just, no.
When you say like bad, like your perception of good and bad, you know, what is your perception of good and bad?
Well, bad would be me forming an image that I don't like. So that doesn't work with me.
Yeah.
But if I form an image that I do like, then it's good. Well, I think it's good.
Yeah.
But your good image may be different from my good image.
Yeah. Let's have a look at the...
So how do you, like...
Let's answer that first question first. Is it bad to form an image? Let's have a look at God himself. 1:1 Genesis. Let us do what? There you go. He used. This is a gift. It's a servant. It's supposed to serve you. It's supposed to serve you to get what you need to get. Let us put man in our own image. He just molded it right there. And so we have the same power, the creative power, to be able to mold. Well, the molding power shouldn't be the ultimate power. It's a tool. The ultimate power is the power of nothingness. See, let's because this is like explaining the wind again, but let's put it into context. Yeah, I mold the Young Achievers Award. I win it. People come in and say, Joel, you're the greatest. Makes no difference to who I am. I've just ticked another box, or I did an experiment. It's a science experiment for me. For people, it's like big achievement. For me, it's an experiment. Testing out the power that is in me. That's all this life is supposed to be about. Enhancing your senses to test out your power. That's what Paul says, do you not realize that Christ is in you, coming through as power and wisdom? Or have you failed to test? So then, what does that mean? It means, opportunities will keep coming to me because I'm like ticking them off. Tick, tick, tick. I'm solving them. It's like a puzzle. Solve, solve, solve. And people may go and say, you're the greatest and stuff. It's none of my interest. Yeah, good, thank you. Bye. I'm on. I don't get attached to it because when you get attached to it, everything's supposed to happen in change. Not everything is deemed to change. There is no such thing as same. For example, let's say the seasons of the year. We have every season, the same seasons every year. Though it's the same season, but the seasons are not the same. Do you know that? That might be a bit confusing for people to catch that. Though it's the same seasons, the seasons are not the same. And so the idea is everything must move. I can't hold on to an age, it must keep going. I can't hold on to a look, it must keep going. I can't hold on to an attitude, it must keep going. Things must keep moving. It must flow like milk and honey. Creator. You don't just create one thing and stop. Create, destroy, create, destroy. What the fuck? God is also called a destroyer. He creates a destroyer, creates a destroyer. I don't think the mic is on.
When you talk, you gave us the example of Young Achiever. My question is,
yeah.
When I've planted that, like obviously you imagine, you know, you went onto the stage.
Yeah.
And then once you have planted that seed of you winning it, right? It was finished.
You got to go into
so how do
faith. You got to switch now. You got to stop using. So think of it this way. Before you were working with the senses and the senses transported it into the conscious mind, the conscious mind has done its job now. The ego has done its job. The conscious mind has done its job. Now you got to pass it to the next stage, which is the spiritual says, the unseen, the things that happen in the background. And for the things that happen in the background, what governs the things that happen in the background? Faith is the substance of things what? Hope for, the evidence of things not seen. The evidence of things not seen. So now we got to switch it to faith. To act as the evidence of things not seen. So now faith works along with imagination and all this stuff to produce and create a modern image. Because once that's done, it's passed all the way back up. It's passed, it's taken again from your faith and your imagination and whatever, it's passed into the conscious mind and then you receive the physical matter. That's the process there. I'll have to do a lesson one day showing you the full process, how it goes in, out. You just go in. It's like going into the spiritual realm, taking what's yours, bringing it back to on earth. Going back, taking what's yours, bringing it back on earth. That's what it is. That's the process. And so, now that I've done Young Achiever, do I still identify myself as Young Achiever? No, I've moved on ages ago. Before the manifestation, I already moved on. It was all done a long time ago. So what I'm trying to do now is on a different level. You guys will see this year or next year, some other stuff pop up and you say, wow, but I'm not even there anymore. I'm already somewhere else. Creating some other things. All right, let me give an example. Let's say you're hungry. You just ate. You want to eat another one of those? Yeah. You've moved on. When your hunger is satisfied, you've moved on. There's no need to stay there. Why should I stay there anymore? And so then, let's move on. So then, we speak of the difference between a happening and a doing. And we're trying to understand how much of what I do I actually do. And how much of it happens to me. Matter of fact, the large percentage of the world has seen reality as something that happens to them. Solely that. Someone is doing bad to me. My manager is firing me, hurting me. He did this to me. And we see ourselves as the small fish getting bullied by a bigger fish. And that's the picture we have of ourselves. Without knowing that nothing can take place in your life without the consent of your mind. Nothing. And that's interesting. And then someone might ask also, so how does the consent stuff work? That's a whole other process. No, I won't go into it today. That's a whole other process of how things get consented in your mind, accepted process and stuff. And it all happens subconsciously and we don't even know it's happening. Now, I was going to go deep into this slide here. You had something to say, Cody? But we'll come back to this on another day. Let's actually move on to this. Now, most of your pain is derived from resistance of the wave. Now, when we speak of suffering and all this stuff, this is caused by resistance. Now, I'm trying to learn how to communicate with the mind. And as a process of learning how to communicate with the mind, I must surrender. Because if I'm teaching a kid something, I teach what I got to teach. But the rest is not up to me. I must live the let go life. I must let go of control. But pain is a result of resistance. What does that mean? It means that if the wave is coming in, and this is the hard bit of life, is that the wave is always flowing. We all go, always going, you hit your peak, you go down. You hit your peak, you go drop down. You hit your peak, and that's the flow of life. Now, some people hit the peak and want to stay there. Life says, what the hell? You must go down. You must go down for other people to go up. You must go down. Imagine how would the world look like if it was all winter, the whole year. If summer was it, the whole year, no rain. Droughts. The seasons are very interesting. Anyways, now the wave of life flows. Now one was at the peak and they say, all right, it's your time to go down. Go down. And now he doesn't want to go down. He wants to resist. Why me? Why? Why can't this be somebody else? And so we get frustrated with it, with the waves. And we try to control it. But who here can really control a wave? You can't. The only way to go past it is to surf through it. You must learn how to surf the wave. And we suffer because we try to resist. We'll get there. We suffer because we try to resist. And resistance is because we're trying to have control. And control is the act of the ego. It's when the ego has become a master. Whenever your ego has become your master, control is what you try to do. Mike, we need to get this on the mic, man.
Because this is what I'm struggling with at the moment.
Yeah.
I want to control every single thing. For example, I took my car last week to get service. I wanted to see what they were doing to my car. Comes back and there's an issue. So then this is me. My ego's going, go back and wash them. You know, this is me wanting to take control of everything. This is what I'm struggling with at the moment. And I'm struggling to ride that wave of the fact that they've damaged my car. Do you know what I mean? My ego's going, my right.
Here's another example, the way I look at it. Imagine you're learning something new. You're in a new workplace. Your new manager says, Sizzle, I want you to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And I'll check with you at the end of the day. He's like, all right, cool. You get on your computer and you sit there and you're about to start. You look on your shoulder and the manager's standing right there, watching every move. You click the wrong... Why did you click that? Don't click that. And so you've got a huge ball of conscious attention pointed at you. How much mistake would you make? Do you think so? It's the opposite.
How? You're putting your subconscious mind under pressure.
Let's have a look at ideas.
What is it? God. Jesus and the Father. Jesus didn't do anything. He let the Father do everything.
Have a look at this. Have a look at this. Let's have a look at innovation and ideas. When I have something to fix, I look at it and say, let me fix it. I can't get an idea how to fix it. I don't know how to fix it. It doesn't work out. So I let it go. I leave it. I go do something else. While I'm doing something else, boop, an idea pops up. A solution. Who did the work? It wasn't you. It was done deep down in your subconscious. There is servants built within you, designed to serve at your command. You are the king. You are the queen. You have the power to give out and delegate work in you. And the subconscious goes in and gets it done. And so if you can delegate in you, you can also delegate in another person, in them, without even opening your mouth. That's why it's crazy to see great leaders, Martin Luther King, all these guys, they never spoke and say, follow me. He said, I have a dream. He leaves the stage, that his dream becomes a million people's dreams. Just like that. How did he do it? They didn't question them. They just stood. Nelson Mandela, all these leaders, they have great power. And these people could die for the cause of it. They could even leave their families behind just to lead, to serve this leader. He don't need to watch them, chase after them, monitor them, question them. He doesn't even have to open his mouth. But somehow these guys just know, I got to follow. I got to get it done. And guys like that, have you seen fanatics, people that are a fan of clubs? Do you know how far these people go to get things done? If they've got to support the club, he would spend his whole salary just to support the club. Buy some banners, buy some this, choreograph it, go in. And there's no reward towards it at the end of it. Now, just like it happens on the outside, it also happens on the inside. Where we have the power to instruct our deep subconscious, and there's tons of servants. And the Bible calls these servants angels. They're at your command. And they're listening, waiting for you to give out a command. And so I give the command within myself, and I say, I can't figure out this issue. Who can figure it out for me? And then I leave it. Well, then people go out, and not people, angels go out and do the work deep in the subconscious, figure it out, and then bring it back to me. Master, we figured it out. Boop. The idea pops up. That's how I create all the stuff that I create. That's how I innovate all the time. People say, you're a genius. No, I'm not a genius. The servants, they do the work. Because that's what Jesus said. It is not I who do the work. People try to praise Jesus. He said, no, it's not me. You people don't understand. Every morning, Jesus will go in and check in with the Father. Okay, what solution you got? Boop, 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 boop. He downloaded the solutions. And then he goes on along his days. And he sees the Pharisees, and the Bible says, before the Pharisees even opened his mouth, he already knew what they were thinking, what he was going to do. He already had the whole day was already finished. You do it all the time. How do you get ideas? You download. It's omnipotent. See, the earth is interesting. During this coronavirus, there's a lot of sections of the planet that just restored itself. And it's very funny. Because people were told, we could fix it, we fix this, fix that, fix this. Yeah, it's good to do good things. But there's certain areas that just fix itself. People just went inside the house, quarantine, and the planet fixed itself. It's very interesting. That tells us something very interesting. The body even tells you that. You cut yourself. It fixes itself. It doesn't need your help. It doesn't need your help to fix itself. And so then, let's have a look and see how we solve this problem of resistance and control and ego. Now, the reaction is, let's talk about the reaction first. Whenever you apply the ego as a master and you try to have control over a situation, over an experience, over something, you create resistance. Because when life says go left and you're trying to go right, you're resisting, you're going against the wave. And when you go against the wave will come crashing down on you. And when the wave comes crashing down on you, it's painful. That's why it hurts. You get annoyed, you start condemning someone, you feel disappointed. And to be disappointed, the word itself says it. That means you have appointed something that went the opposite way. So you've appointed something and it's went the opposite way, so now you're not happy with it. And you're blaming your manager, you're blaming the person, this person is an idiot, this person is this person is that. Follow the flow of life. The flow of life is very beautiful. It's a wave. And if you follow the flow of life, there is never failure. Failure does not exist if you ride the wave. Now, this feeling of rejection and condemnation and disappointment and blaming and annoyance and hurt and all this stuff, and we do it all the time. If I say I want my partner to act a certain way and she doesn't act a certain way, I'm annoyed. I'm hurt. Why? Because I can't control her. Now, let's have a look. Jesus gave us a great secret. We read the secret of Jesus, how to do it years after years, and we never really understood what he was saying. Oh, Jesus is a beautiful guy. Have a look at this. Matthew 5:39. You know, Matthew 5 is dedicated just on resistance. The whole Matthew 5 is dedicated on resistance. Especially the later verse. He says this. But I tell you, not to resist evil. And this word evil in the Hebrew, it doesn't mean bad. It doesn't mean, in the Greek, it doesn't mean bad. It's evil, it's full of labor, it's annoyance, it's hardship. Don't resist hardship. Don't resist things that will cause you pain. Because it's only perception-wise. Don't resist it. And it says, but I tell you not to resist evil. Not to resist an evil person. And this word person, the English messes up because it makes you think it's an individual. But it's the word in the Greek which means whosoever or whatsoever. So it's talking about it. An experience, a flow, a wave. Don't resist a wave Because the wave can cause you great pain. So don't resist it. Do not resist the experience. Because it will cause you great pain. Well, I break up with a certain person. And I really wanted to be with them. The more I resist, the more pain I feel. The more depressed I get. The more I cry. But if I say, all right, it's a flow of life, better things are to come. Better things are to come. Just like that. And we try to resist and try to control. And then he says this, he gives a metaphorical explanation. He says, whoever and whatever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. So if they slap you on the right, turn left. If life slaps you on the right, what do? You give it your left. Now, how do you turn to the other cheek? How do you do that in life? How do you do that? When your experience is not going the way you want it to go, how do you turn to the other cheek? How do you not resist the flow of life? Because that's the secret right there, is to turn the other cheek. What do you guys think?
For that verse, like, I had a different meaning. Like, you know, if someone punched me in the face, so no, my left cheek, I would give them my right cheek. Because if I punch them back, then for me, like, I'm teaching them that. You know, whereas I feel like if they hit you and then you offer them your other cheek, they'll be so confused. Like, you're being an example of love and, I guess, like, godness. And it messes with their, I guess, paradigm, because they think it's so normal to react to evil doings and stuff like that with evil doings.
Yeah.
See, that part I get, like, if Layton slapped me, that part I get about turning the cheek. But when life, that's the one.
Now, like, when look at this.
Circumstances.
We got to go back in the oneness. The universe and you are not separate.
See, that part I get then.
Do why, you really?
Yeah, because why is it? No. It's doing things that I don't want it to do. I didn't plant this stuff, though. Why is it happening? I planted something manifested, and this is not what I planted.
Do you know how you plant?
I live in the end. No, what? But what I'm saying, it's not come. No, because what is happening?
The process of plantation. Do you know it?
I go and I imagine and I feel and I use my senses and then, no, but what's happening now is not what I manifested.
Here's the way I look at it. A man said it this way. He said, he was talking about success. He said, to be successful, it doesn't take much. Just stand. And I said, what does it mean, just stand? That's all it takes to be successful. Just then. Now, straight away the idea of, imagine if there was a line that said, okay, at the front of the line you get $200. Well, you get, let's hop up the price, $10,000. Now, you become conscious that this thing is taking place. And you join the line. Now, when you join the line, you are number 7,000,074. Straight away, everybody is discouraged. You join the line, people start leaving. I've been standing here for 17 hours. They're gone. Everybody's leaving. Now, to get to the very top and become at the very top number one, what does it take? No effort, no thinking, no reasoning, no questioning, just end. Because people will keep dropping. Because it's a mental battle. And they'll keep dropping. And as long as you stand, that's all it is. As long as you stand, you will get to the front of the line. It's guaranteed. And so Jesus gave a parable just on this. And that's why, you see, let me give an example of how I published research in Japan. I went out to this publication. I said, I want to do this. They rejected me. It doesn't matter. It makes no difference to me. I just stand. I went out and applied to this publication in Brisbane. They rejected me. He didn't get it. I went out. He didn't get it. It makes no difference to me. I don't react. I don't act. I don't move. Well, then, I stand back and I keep living. I keep riding the wave. Whatever he throws at me, I just ride it. I just ride it. Months goes by and then matter of fact, I was thinking about publishing in Australia first before going internationally. I skipped all that. Ended up publishing internationally straight away and becoming a doctor. Straight away. So, which process is shorter? The wave riding? Or the easy gratification? My perception tells you quicker gratification is the best way. Because this is a funny thing. The difference between the distance between all my failures and the publication was 6 months. 6 months. If I dropped and gave up during that 6 months, I missed it. Just like that. I didn't have to do anything special. I didn't have to question whether my writing was good or bad or this. I didn't have to do any of that. Just stand. And whatever comes, just write. No need to complain. No need to blame anybody. Well, then people look at me and say, wow, how did you get here so quick, so fast? You're only 23, this and this and that. But riding the wave is an art. It's a skill. Not many people want to ride the wave. Because you look around, you don't see anything. Matter of fact, this study here, I've been writing this study from the very beginning. There's been times and times where I thought about quitting. Thought about just giving up. And I'm like, shouldn't this manifest? I've seen this already. Shouldn't this room be packed and filled with people already? Yes. Right? I could have quit ages ago. But guess what I do? The complete opposite. At one time, this room used to be full with people, and then before I knew it, it was just me by myself, and then a bunch of people again, and then me by myself, and then all that stuff plays in the head. And so what I do, people come and go, it makes no difference. I'm buying more equipment, investing more. Now we got the app going. People would think I'm crazy, right? I'm not seeing physical results. But I'm just keep investing money after money. And the amount of money I've invested on Real Creation is crazy if I tell you the number. Invested, trying to get some contracts here and there with Amazon, with all these big guys. But people say, well, you got to wait to get people in before you can. And it's funny. But I've seen the end results. Mike, we gotta get a mic, man.
Say, for example, you manifest a car, right? Your dream car, Lamborghini, right? You manifest it, right? Then the car you have break, like, it has problems. No, because the way, why is the wave coming in the first,
in the first place?
Yes. That's like, why is the wave coming when manifestation, go. If I want 100 people, tomorrow 100 people.
All right. You want to see
that? There's a story. So this woman and her ex-husband, he said to his wife, because they're at the beach, and he thought it was really silly that there were surfers just sitting there, just waiting. But she realized they weren't waiting, like they were expecting. They were expecting the waves to come. And, you know, and she said she turned her desires into expectations. And when you you know the wave. So those surfers there are like sitting down and they're expecting a wave to come. And when they see it coming, they ride it. It's like,
Mike, we need to get this stuff. Mike, this is good content.
Is it, they're waiting for it because they're expecting it, right? Or, because I wouldn't just wait there for something.
It's not so much, like, they know. Like, it's.
What's to say to that? The wave comes whether the person's there or not. Like, it just depends on. Oh, is Bernadette going to be that surfer? Is Sizzle going to be that surfer? Joel going to be that surfer? Who's there when that wave goes up?
I don't know when the wave goes up.
All right. Let's say you vision and manifest them. Let's have a look, right? We're going to give you what your heart desire, right? All right, cool. Ready? Let's do it. Let's do it. All right. You want a Jeep Grand Cherokee? You can have it tomorrow. You want to become prime minister? You can become it tomorrow. You want to become this? You can become it tomorrow. You want the dream job? You can become it tomorrow. Now what? What do you want?
Now what do I want?
Yeah?
No. Now what do I want? I should have all that stuff.
What do you want?
I want
a house. Okay, then we give you a house right tomorrow. Immediate gratification. Everything you want, you can get it tomorrow.
Yes.
Then what do you want after tomorrow?
Because you're playing yourself. It's a game. It's a game of...
You see? If everything you want, you can have it. Every single thing you can think of in the world, you can have it tomorrow. It'll be good, right? And then the week after, you realize there is nothing else to gain from this life. Then you must die. There's nothing else. You've done it all.
A lot of there's this guy who talks about money on YouTube. His name's Dan Locke. He's financial guy, millionaire, and he teaches other people how to, you know, get their finances in shape and, you know, become a millionaire. And he's done that for a few people. Anyways, when he got to that stage, he was like, "Oh yeah, sweet. Gonna do what I wanted to do." Went on a holiday, you know, very nice, you know, had a swim, you know, looking at all the ladies, you know, just enjoying his holiday. Week goes by, another week goes by. He's like, "All right, done all this stuff." Starting to get like itchy, scratching his head. And then like later on, he got bored of the holiday, of the retreat. Like, he did not need to work. He did not need to do anything. He was financially free. But he was bored. He got to that point, that stage in life, and he was like, "What's next?" That's like what Joel's saying. Like, when you give instant gratification, you'll get there. But later on, you'll be like, "All right, what's next?"
Matter of fact, that's actually not what you want. Even though if we feel like human, we feel like that's what we want. That's not what we want.
Yeah? Yeah, have you ever heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Yeah, exactly. And at the bottom you have security, shelter, you know, all the basic needs, and you eventually work your way up, and you have that respect. You have that, you know, that power. And at the very top, though, it's pretty much like your purpose. So, like, after you've got all these material possessions, like your Grand Cherokee and your house and all this stuff, and this role of power as, you know, Prime Minister. Well, if that's your purpose, you won't need anything more.
No,
Yeah, of course. But what I'm saying is, like, after you've done that, like, when you find your purpose in life, you won't need anything else. You'll know what you want and what you need to do.
Let me tell you a very interesting thing. I'm gonna end with this. I'm gonna tell you this very thing. A man said this. He said, for a beginning student, when he was asked, what do you want in life? He responded, I don't know. Because he never really thought of it. He never really thought what they really want. For a middle student who is halfway there, when he's asked, what do you want? He lists a bunch of stuff. I want this, I want this, I want to manifest this, I want to do this, I want to get this, I want to get that, I want to reach there, I want to do this, I want to do that. Well, after getting all that, when you realize you are your own genie, you can manifest all that instantly. Then you're asked again, what do you want? And you respond again, I don't know. If all you can ever need and ever have, you have it in one go. Here and there, here and now. What else can you do? Well, you might say, well, my purpose is also to change and transform the life of people. I was like, okay, cool. Every word you speak, someone gets changed. So you stand on the screen and say 17 words, 17 people get transformed.
I feel like that's how it's meant to be.
It is.
What did the third student say?
I don't know.
I'm lost.
You are. That's exactly where you're supposed to be.
You know how you were talking about how you were still investing regardless whether it was two people or one person here?
Yeah.
What was the purpose of you going through that? What was the point of that wave? That?
I don't know.
No.
I'm not lying to you. Someone got angry at me because I didn't know. They want me to know. I really don't know why I'm there. Yeah, I don't know why I win all these young achievers. I can manifest all this stuff. I don't know why I do it.
It's the whole omnipotent meme thing. Like, how do you wake up? How do you digest your food?
Because deep down, that's not really what I want. I don't know what I want. That's the funny thing. But I know deep down, that's not what I want. If every word I could speak, the whole world can be changed, then it's pointless. There's no use to it. It's like, think about it, ready? When you purchase something that's a dollar, how much value do you give it? Let's say you purchase one something, it's $1. Another thing you purchase, $10,000. How much value do you treat what's $1 the same way you treat what's $10,000? No. No matter how much you try to, you won't.
Would you treat a Lamborghini the same way you treat your car right now?
No.
Yeah, well, the Jeep, yeah.
It's the same thing. It's because the process it took to get it, that's really what's gratifying, not the actual thing. It's the process it took to get it. The process is the most gratifying thing. It's not the actual thing.
I was just reading a book and he's he teaches on financial literacy, and his wife was able to get a car that she wanted, and she was more happy with the fact that she she gained all this knowledge on how to manage money and stuff, and that because she was able to manage money, she went through the process of managing it, she was more happy that she got the car because of how, the process of it, because the process of getting it.
Is that why the Bible says rejoice in suffering? Because suffering produces endurance, character. Is that?
Yeah, because what you really want is that character. You want someone to look at you and say, wow, such a character. You actually don't want... you, trust me, you stand there, people will say, great achiever, 12 awards, all this. I don't want to listen to myself. When I wanted... People kept messaging me. I said, stop messaging me. Keep in my back of my head, I won't respond that, but it gets annoying. And look well. People are in fame. Those who seem to get instant fame, they're quick to go into deep depression and harm themselves and this. It's too much. Nuh-uh. The only way is if you went through a process. The only people that are able to maintain fame in a calm manner is those who slowly built it up in a process. Anybody that just rocketed out of nowhere goes crazy. Because the human mind is not supposed to be like that. And you will never be grateful. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. You decide that.
The process is ongoing. It's always ongoing.
Beautiful answer. Matter of fact,
it never stops.
Yeah, that's the best answer right there. Life is all process. It's exactly. Not stuff. Oh, I'll write it.
It's really important to enjoy it. That's the that's like this. If you don't enjoy it, then you like. You ruin that energy if I'm going to be...
Look, let me tell you something. Someone asked me once, Joe, the purpose of life and stuff. I said, all right, what's the purpose? Because they were saying all these ups and downs and waves and this and this. I said, all right, cool. What's the purpose of a song? Song, music. To get to the end of it? The experience. You see? People are trying to run away to heaven. Let me quickly get to the end of it. Stop right there, mate. You get to the end of it without living the process, you failed. That's the greatest failure. Because you missed the whole point. Well, because you're not enjoying it enough. That's why. Because you're trying to get to the end of the song. You're skipping songs, trying to skip songs. No. Listen to the song all the way. Huh? Well, yeah. Because this is the danger of skip button. When you skip, you skip, and death comes and finds you. You skip that all the way to death.
I think it's...
And then you have premature death. This is good stuff. No, this is good. This is good.
It's it's so good that you're being honest.
This is good. I've been there. It's good.
I think it's really important to reflect on where your joy truly lies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, like, if Cody was, like, broke and, you know, we were living... Yeah, you were. He was in debt when I married him.
Man, she took a risk. She took a risk.
And, but it wasn't about the money or the material things or, you know, the car or the house. It was about the love that was there and just knowing and the person who I get to experience life with.
It's all experience.
It was the Cody.
It was the experience. Like, even through our troubled times and our engagement and just those hard times where we didn't know what we know now and we're still learning, you know, who knows what we're going to experience, but it's like, you know, you go through that to be stronger in yourself and in your confidence in love, your confidence in God. And yeah, it's just fun, but like, yeah, you can't really, you know, you already know all this stuff. Like, you can't experience the good without the bad. You can't experience the being rich without being poor, like, you know, because you wouldn't know what it is, you know.
100%.
I was just gonna add, with purpose in life, I think the one thing that I've experienced and noticed the most with when I see people and they say, look, I found my purpose, I'm happy doing this, I find that it's people helping other people, it's helping others.
That's good.
Then that's the wave. That's the process.
Let's go back on that slide. Why do people get crushed? Most of the pain is derived from resistance of the wave. There's only one thing that causes pain.
It's just like
resistance.
But you look at the story of what's his name? The one who had everything.
Job.
That's right. Job had everything. Had beautiful wife, like a beautiful wife.
Yeah.
He had beautiful daughters, beautiful sons.
Yeah.
What happened? He lost everything. He lost all his daughters. He ended up losing his best friends, his wife. He lost everything.
Yeah.
And that's life. But you know what? He worked
and
hard.
Listen to what Job says at the end of it. He calls the whole experience marvelous, beautiful.
Trusted the process.
Towards the end, Job looks back and calls the whole experience, it's marvelous. Oh, beautiful. I'll find a verse for you.
I was just going to say, you know, your conscious attention, your, you know, angry is just, you know, that illusion. So if you're conscious of being it, it becomes real. Character.
Have a look at this. Job 42, he says something very interesting. Let's read from 1. It says this. Job answered to the Lord and said, I know that you can do everything and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You asked, who is this who hides counsels without knowledge? Therefore, I have altered what I did not understand. Things too wonderful for me. Something you did not understand. This is things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Listen, please, and let me speak. You said, I will question you, and you shall answer me. I've heard of you by hearing of the ears, but now my eyes have seen, my eyes sees you. Therefore, I'll bow myself. Oh, joy. He just experienced something very beautiful. People don't see this, what he just experienced. And repent in dust and ashes. This scripture here is big. He looks at back at his whole experience and he sees wonder. He says, I've heard of God. But after this experience, now I see. This will be you. You go through it and then you say, wow, now I see. That's what you were trying to get to. Where you say, now I see. Yeah. 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 Man, how are you not going to get this on my mic? My content.
When I first came here a year ago, right?
Yeah, we need to conclude. It's already
I was
9 o'clock.
I was a mess, right?
Yeah.
And then after the experiences, after the experience of all of that, when I got baptized, I saw them and I went, wow. Now I, like, you know, same as Job. So you're telling me.
Nah, you didn't see anything. You experienced something.
Then.
When you, this phrase here is at the very end of Job's life. When he reached that stage 3. When they asked him, what do you want? He would have answered you, I don't know. That's where Job was. I know not. Things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. You don't know. Though it's wonderful, you don't know. The experience was so beautiful that he altered his understanding, switched it 180. We'll end there. We'll continue next week. Thank you.